Hi, this is Ellen Schumann, emotional and binge eating recovery coach with TheWayOut.com, welcoming you to the Way Out teleseminar series. We regularly interview cutting-edge authors and top experts in the fields of psychology, nutrition, exercise, and lifestyle, and recovery from emotional and binge eating. We post these seminars inside our members' circle so our members can listen to them at their own convenience. Today we're talking about what's in your way. How do we stop seeing life as a series of problems that need to be solved and instead begin to see life as an adventure that gets to be lived? Those are the words of my guest today, Mary O'Malley. She is an international teacher and speaker, a group facilitator and counselor in Kirkland, Washington, and author of the book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, which was the subject of one of our most popular teleseminars last year, and also the book that we're focusing on today. It's called What's in the Way is the Way. Great to have you with us again, Mary. Welcome.
Oh, so glad to be here, Ellen. So glad.
Same here. So tell me, the book is called What's in the Way is the Way. What does that mean?
Well, if you look very carefully, if you had a little door on your forehead and you could open it up, if you watch as a ticker tape, the 65,000 thoughts a day, that's what they say now, that we have 65,000 thoughts a day. And every time I say that, I feel very tired.
I bet, me too.
Oh, my goodness. But if you could watch, you could see very, very deeply that it's a little problem factory, this storyteller in your head. And I just invite people to imagine this big smoking factory and this with this little conveyor belt, and it's churning out, you know, the byproduct of this problem factory. You know, and oftentimes the byproducts are as small as a grain of sand. We just don't like the length of the stoplight or how our hair looks today. But, you know, also they can get bigger, like, you know, my husband says I want a divorce, or the doctor says you have a lump, we have to check it out. Mm-hmm. And if you watch very carefully, you'll see that what we do is we do one of two things. We struggle with what we don't like, or we numb out from what we don't like. In fact, I have said in, you know, The Gift of Our Compulsions, our core compulsion is to struggle. All the other compulsions are an attempt to numb out from that. So what's in your way is the way. You know, people, I can't tell you how many people have said, oh, I love that title, because intrinsically we know what it means. It means that we can stop fighting with life or numbing ourselves out and start becoming curious about what life is offering.
Don't you find, though, or do you find, because this is my experience with the people I coach, the concept of not being stuck in the struggle often is not even on the table when they think about how to get well. The struggle is so much a part of the story, the storytelling you talk about.
Yes,
that
so much.
They don't even understand when we talk about letting go of that. There's not even a way to get there in their head.
And that's why I wrote this book. And to try to let go of the struggle is more struggle. What this book is about being curious about what is going on inside of you. And the more that you can see how much your mind struggles with most everything, you know, without turning it into a problem, and we do need guidance, it's almost like learning a new language, the more you unhook from struggle. I call it look to unhook. So it is a new skill set that I'm talking about. It's not about fixing things. It's not about getting rid of things. I mean, it's like we talked on the program about compulsions. Oh, my God, I gained and lost, I think, thousands of pounds. Mm-hmm. And one year I gained 97 pounds in a year. And now I've just been so even around food, and I eat really well for decades now. How did I get there? Not by trying to whip my compulsive one into shape, you know, and then whip myself into shape, you know. It was starting to be curious about this whole urge to reach out and go for food. Now, you know, food is mine. You know, it could be tobacco. It could be busyness. You know, it's one of our favorite compulsions. It could be the internet, whatever. But that urge to turn away from ourselves is where we get lost in the quicksand. And we need to discover in a very safe way how to actually be curious about what we are experiencing.
You talk about, you write about that moving beyond the struggle, you know, into the joy of being fully alive, mm-hmm. but that one of the barriers to that is that we often feel that somehow we're not okay. And you say that's a myth, that we're not okay. Why is it a myth, and why do you think so many of us feel this way?
Because we all, at one time, there was no thoughts in our head. When we were first born, we were wide open to life. And as children, we kind of absorbed the worlds around us. And we were very, very vulnerable to what was going on. And there's that wonderful study that I put into The Gift of Our Compulsions about the baby rhesus monkeys at the University of Wisconsin in 1952. And they took baby rhesus monkeys away from their mothers at birth and put them in cages all by themselves. And they had to choose between a wire-form monkey where they could, they had a bottle hanging from it, or a cloth monkey that they could hug. And 100% of the time. I know, it breaks my heart, but we learn something so important, Ellen, that connection is more important than food. And most of us were raised by what I call unconscious giants.
So I interrupted you. The monkeys chose the cloth monkeys.
Monkeys, 100%. Yeah. Of the time.
To cuddle, to feel connected.
To connect. We are connectors. And where we are in evolution, most of our parents had left themselves a long time ago for ideas about themselves, ideas about life. And when we take on this separate self, that the foundations are pretty well formed by the time we're six, Eckhart Tolle calls it the mind-made me, that the mind actually makes a me that we think we are. That's what struggles all day long. If we see at the core of it, it is based on fear. If you just open up that little door in your forehead, you could watch that ticker tape, you'll see that mostly it talks about fear all day long, but it's glued together with judgment. And that gets seated inside of us when we're very young because we're at the center of the universe. And when things are off in our world, we assume it's because there's something wrong with us. And it's so important to know that everybody has that.
And we're talking here about early childhood attachment issues as well, correct?
Right.
This is about, you know, whether or not the people, your caregivers who loved you, were able to reflect back to you, what you needed, and how few of us have had really functional parents who had the advantage of being taught how to give us what we needed. They had their own issues, as you said. They had their own stories that were in the way of their meeting our needs in ways that would allow us not to go to that place of fear that you just described. Yeah.
And that's why I can remember my first memories, I probably did it before then, was starting to overeat when I was 10. You know, stealing my father's candy and sitting in my bedroom and just shoveling it into my mouth. And I was trying to numb this pain of being all alone, of living in a disconnected family. It looked great from the outside. Mm-hmm. But there was no connection. And the strange and wondrous thing is that compulsion to overeat became my guide back into life because it showed me I tried to get rid of it. I mean, my God, I went a month without food once. I was going to control this. You know, I was going to stop this. I went 2 weeks, two other times without food. And I went on every single diet you can possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. And finally, one day, it began to dawn upon me that maybe, just maybe, I hadn't been able to control this eater inside of me, not because I was a weak-willed ninny, because if you can go a month without food, you have will, you know, up the yang.
To put it mildly, yeah.
Yes, but that it wasn't will that was going to heal it. And that's when I started to get curious. I made a decision that every time that I turned away from myself into managing myself with food, I would get curious for at least a moment. I would at least acknowledge it. At the beginning, that's all I could do before the tsunami wave of, you know, having to fill and fill and fill, you know, would take over. But slowly and surely, that curiosity got stronger, and I came to the place where, you know, I would have one moment of, okay, you're here. Okay, what are you trying to take care of? I say that to my eater. What are you trying to take care of? And then it's 2 hours later. You know, I've just shoveled and shoveled and shoveled. And then what comes is judgment. Oh, my God, I did it again. Mm-hmm. And despair. Oh, my God, I'll never get through it. And then what began to come is curiosity. Okay, what does it feel like to take care of myself in this way? And I began to break the spell that all compulsions have. If you just eat me, drink me, smoke me, whatever, shop me, buy me, exercise me, then you will feel much better. And the truth of it is, maybe for, you know, 2 minutes, we do.
Right.
But then we pay a heavy price. And I began to bring curiosity into that process. And now with what's in the way is the way, I'm bringing that same curiosity into all of our challenges.
So when someone says to you in that moment, because they're listening and what you're saying is sound and makes sense, and they say to you, as they say to me, in that moment in time, I can't tolerate, I can't stand being in my
right.
own skin long enough
right.
to change the story or feel the feelings
right.
and then get curious about them,
yep.
what do you say?
That we start it when the wave passes through. We all know that this movement, this urge, this primal urge to numb ourselves out is so unbelievably strong. Why is that? Because the depth of the pain, the agony of not being enough, the fear of being all alone, the terror of being overtaken in our lives, this is our joy that got bound up inside of ourselves. And this is a very strong spell. I call these spells in this new book, and I like the word spells because it's something that's laid over the top of us. It's not true, and they can be lifted. So mm-hmm. what we do is we start working with the moment when you can start being curious, and that may be, you know, after the wave has passed through, or maybe even the next morning when you wake up and you have a food hangover. But more and more, you begin to become curious about when the wave comes, and more you are able to meet yourself. Is this a quick fix? No. But mm-hmm. is this the way out? As far as I can see, yes, it is.
It is.
It's to actually meet ourselves rather than endlessly trying to fix ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And let me share something that I know you believe in as well. It's curiosity without judgment.
Exactly.
So it's after the fact, the ability to step back and without beating oneself up, because as you and
right.
I and everyone listening to this knows, it's the beating ourselves up that leads to not being able to tolerate yet again, that leads to more food thoughts to numb
exactly.
out and leads to more binging.
Yeah. And I was working with a woman that was very ill when she was young. And in and out of hospitals, and it was just so traumatizing, and that it even came to a point where they wouldn't let her parents visit her anymore because she would cry so hard when they left. Okay, so mm-hmm. this is before she was two. Okay, so her aliveness, her joy, got really frozen inside of her. And of course, she's been, you know, dealing with food issues her whole life and had a gastric bypass and now is eating her way, you know, back.
Right back up. Yep.
Right back up again, because that's not the, you know, you as Einstein.
It does not fix this.
It doesn't. Right. And we need to come at it at a different level. Einstein said if you try to solve the problem at the same level it's been created, you only create more problems.
Right.
She has beginning to learn that when she turns to food, she's not dumb, she's not stupid, that this urge to turn to food is just like the, you know, if you get cold, your body shivers. Or if you get hot, your body sweats. That the mind is just like that. It wants to keep balance in our lives. And when these deep feelings that got frozen inside of us when we were very young come close to the surface, I love to say that our compulsions are like lumbering beasts with an IQ of 55 that are on automatic pilot. And it says, right. Eat the thing, drink the thing, or you will die, or smoke the thing, or whatever. When she began to hear that was, she wasn't bad or wrong for doing that. And that it, what is it trying to take care of? That was an interesting question to ask. And more her heart is opening to this little girl that so much was frozen inside of her. And then her father, who is quite elderly, had what they thought was a heart attack, and he lives in another state. And she immediately got on an airplane. As soon as she got to the airport, she went and grazed at the candy counter.
Makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does. And when we talked 3 days later, she was in so much fear. Remember, this storyteller is based on fear. Oh, my God, it's back, it's back, it's back. You know, she's had a break from it for a long time now. And judgment, oh, my God, why did I do that? You know, what's wrong with me? And, you know, and so on and so forth. And by the end of that conversation, her heart was open again. It made sense to her. It was totally out of the world of judgment. And she was curious again about this little girl inside of her that got frozen all those years ago, that possibly losing her father brought up that same energy of her parents leaving her over and over again.
Mm-hmm. It literally triggers a pathway in the brain.
Yes.
A neural fiber that's connected all the way back to that original pain. And you just said something really important that I want to point out, and I promise to those of you who are listening, I'm not trying to sell my services or Mary's services, but what you just described is why it's so important to find somebody with whom you can do this work.
Right.
Because without somebody to challenge the original thoughts and pathways,
right.
that ticker tape, those stories that you talked about earlier just keep playing over and over again without interrupting them and opening to the possibility that maybe you could view this differently.
Yes, that's it. View it differently. That's what happened to the woman, you know, in that conversation. And and for me, the word challenge doesn't work because, oh, my God, these are such – if I can't tell you how many people have said to me, oh, my God, what I'm going to say to you is so ridiculous and it's stupid and it's silly. And it's not at all.
Right.
It's just that very young part of ourselves that needs to be heard. And we have to be very it's almost like working with a very shy, formerly abused, baby dear. So I would use the word invitation, an invitation to begin to look at this differently, an invitation to take it out of the world of judgment. Oh, my God, I ate again, you know, to, oh, who's here? And what are you trying to take care of?
And this is a very big question, but what do you think blocks us from a willingness to do that healing work, to healing our fears and our anxieties and often the shame that is so comes hand in hand with this problem?
Well, I say the core of it is that when we were young, we were wide open to life, and we knew it's magic. It's very mysterious. I mean, just go be with a young child. Go to a park with a young child. You know, everything is brand new. And all of us were scared out of that. All of us had experiences. Even if our parents loved us, you know, we had experiences. The example I love to use that is just so very basic. You've just learned how to crawl, and you've gotten into the kitchen, and you open this cupboard door, and there's this shiny thing, and you don't know what's called, pots and pans. And, oh my God, this is just so fascinating. The light, and it changes, and you put it down, and then you grab another one, and you look at that. Then you want another one, so you drop that one, and it hits the first. Oh, what interesting music! And you start hitting the two together, and around the corner becomes your mother going, stop that!
Bang!
And you could feel the child. I mean, all of us had this experience over and over and over again. We were ripped out of connection with the wonder of being alive. And I don't care what it is that you long for, a Maserati, a bigger house, a better mate, a slimmer body. What we really long for is this connection with life. And in my experience, having gone as far as you could go into darkness and still survive, what's in the way is the way, that the challenges of our lives are tailor-made to bring up this, all of this frozen energy inside of us, the not enoughness, the terror of being overtaken of life, the anger, you know, at life, the fear of being alone, that they are all designed to bring this up so we can see them. Like Einstein said, meet them at a different level. And when you actually say, oh, the scared one is here, rather than I am afraid, that's a moment of freedom.
This concept, I love what you're saying. It matches this concept that even though I have a thought, I am not my thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thought is just a thought. It's not mm-hmm. inherently who I am. I had a moment of fear, but that doesn't mean there's something that I have to be afraid of in this moment in time.
Yeah.
And that's this idea. Again, there's so much in this book, and people heard me gush about the first book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, that you wrote. I'm going to gush about this one, too. There's so much in what's in the way is the way that there's no way we can cover it in this brief seminar. But I picked one particular chapter, and we've touched on the curiosity piece, but you talk about four tools of awakening.
Yeah.
The first one, as you said, is curiosity, and that when you bring curiosity up to the forefront, it brings with it great healing power.
Great.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about curiosity that we should add?
Well, let me just speak just a little bit about how this operates.
Okay, cool.
So my mother decided that they went through a horrible divorce, separated when I was 10, divorced when I was 12, and my mother decided that my father was trying to make her go insane by hiring a man who she called Kilroy, this imaginary man. I mean, it never was true. You know, she had this until she died. Even after my father died, she still believed this, that he would come in and whenever we were gone and move something in the house. So we would come home from school and one of us would have left a spoon on the counter for breakfast.
Kilroy
has been here.
Wow.
So I grew up in great terror. Great, great terror. And I tried to eat it away. I tried to drink it away. I tried to drug it away. I went to mental hospitals. I didn't, when that didn't work, I tried to kill myself 3 times. Then, a couple of years later, a teacher came into my life that taught me about curiosity. It was more of an intellectual kind of curiosity, but then I had the very good grace of meeting Stephen Levine. And that was when I began to actually be with this fear. I had tried to fix it. I tried to get rid of it. I never said hello. So where we first learn to do that is in our bodies, because it you know, children really express through their bodies. And so this very young bound up energy that fuels our compulsions, mm-hmm. it expresses through our bodies. And it was just unbelievably freeing when I learned how, when a wave of fear would come, you know, and I had pretty strong waves of fear, the thing that I could, okay, no, wait, that's fear, but it was so seductive that all I would want to do was eat. And slowly and surely, I learned how to go down into my body and find the place where the fear was expressing and actually be that parent that I needed all those years ago. I needed a parent or a godmother or a next-door neighbor saying, I see you're scared. Tell me about it. And so that's when magic began to happen, that slowly and surely this bound-up energy began to open up inside of me. And that's when I learned to listen to what was fueling my overeating. I mean, all the other drugs and alcohol faded away on their own. Eating stayed as my teacher. And I began to not control it anymore. I began to say, I know you have something to show me every time I go to eating. And slowly and surely, I began to hear how young this part was that felt like if it didn't fill its tummy to bursting, then I would die. And so that is the heart, and that is a process of learning how to open our hearts again to actually be with ourselves when we most need ourselves.
And for people who are listening, I know you and I both want people to know there really are tools that
right.
we teach that help people in those moments
yes.
make this easier. I'm thinking if someone's listening to this, it may be a little overwhelming to imagine
right.
letting those feelings
right.
just occur yes. and not being, you use the word, you know, you would die. I used to say the same thing. I thought I would be annihilated if
right.
I let the feelings
right.
up and I felt them. And guess
yeah.
what?
yeah.
It didn't
happen.
I didn't
die.
And it got easier and easier and easier. But
yeah,
you can't
convince.
It happens, as
yeah.
you said, it's not magic. It's not immediate.
Yeah.
It's a process of change that one begins to open up to
yeah.
the learning of the skills. That's why I call them emotional
yeah.
handrails. I reach right. for them to help me feel safe enough to do the work. And
absolutely.
That's what you're talking about here. You
yep.
do it a step at a time.
It's a language. It's just like
it is a language.
You need to learn Spanish. You know, you need
mm-hmm.
to learn the language, and that's why in this new book I have at the end of each of the 10 chapters is what's called the remembering session. And so you begin to develop, it shows you how to develop curiosity for a number of those sessions. Then it shows you how to develop this heart, this ability to actually come back to our own hearts. And that's what we most deeply, deeply,
want.
Deeply long for, to come home mm-hmm. to our hearts.
So before we go into that, the healing of the heart tool, let's go to number two that you wrote about, partnering with your wisdom self.
Yeah, yeah. The you know, I speak from the living experience of it. You know, when I say that I barely survived the kind of darkness that I took on, I barely survived. But then life showed me this pathway back to ourselves. And one of the greatest illusions we have in life is we're all alone. And what I like to say is, well, let's see it. One time you were one cell, and it was so small you couldn't see it with the naked eye. And it developed into 70 trillion cells, and now they all work together without a thought from you. You know, and people go, oh my God, you know, and then we begin to look at, you know, here is this amazing thing that we really trust. We don't think we do. It's called life, the intelligence of life, that brings spring forth out of winter, that heals the cuts on our skin, that I'm looking out, that I live in the Pacific Northwest, and all the roadies in my yard are in full bloom. There's pinks, there's reds, there's purples, there's whites. What is it that takes nothing more substantial than stardust And that's what everything on this planet is made out of, is mm-hmm. atoms that were once a part of a star, and creates aardvarks and bunny rabbits and rhododendrons and you and I, and beats our heart. So what I learned out of desperation was, and especially I learned this in the middle of the night, I first started doing it out of desperation. I would ask life a question, you know, what is the way through this? Or what are you showing me here? Or what is asking to be seen?
Mm-hmm. There's the curiosity.
Yeah, and curiosity again, but it's mm-hmm. curiosity without looking for an answer. This is what I talk a lot about, and if your readers are interested, they can email martha@maryomalley.com, and she will send them, if they're not interested in the gift of our compulsions, the chapter on questions. Because there's right. two kind of questions, check-in, what am I experiencing, what's my tummy feeling right now, you know, that kind of thing. But then there's open-ended questions that really, truly know that when you ask a question without looking for an answer, that answer will be lived through you.
Can you give us an example of that type of question?
Well, what is the way through this? What am I ready to meet here? What is my compulsion taking care of right now? You're signaling life that you're noticing what life is offering us. And it is a radical thing to say, but I am saying that our challenges, including our compulsions, are tailor-made. They are giving us the exact set of experiences we can need in order to see through this prison of this mm-hmm. separate, struggling self.
I love it. Author Gary Zukav says, he talks about it being creator mode, where whatever happens at any moment in time is exactly what you need to learn, yeah. whatever lessons you're meant to learn.
Including your compulsions.
Absolutely.
And what we're doing today is taking it out of the realm of judgment and the realm of management. Okay, I've got to go on another diet, and I know how seductive that can be. And we're beginning to add, we're not saying management is bad or wrong. We're not annihilating that. We're just adding engagement. And engagement is, as far as I can see, the way through this addiction to struggle.
And that's the partnering with your wisdom self is the trust that if you ask the questions, yes. answers will come.
Yeah, and if you watch, the universe hates vacuums. It will always fill up a vacuum. That's a science, you know, truth. Well, mm-hmm. when you ask a question without looking for an answer, you create a vacuum. And it will be lived through you. Not in the time you want, you know, usually.
Right.
But it will be lived through you. Because that intelligence that beats your heart, that heals the cuts on your skin, that brought you forth out of mystery, is with you every step of the way.
So if you trust that some answers will come, the struggle goes away.
You don't even have to trust. Just do it. You know, the mind will say, oh, this is not working, you know, uh-huh. or, you know, oh, I'm just not getting the right answers, you know, and I've had people that have worked with me for a couple of years, and they're just so much more open, and they say, well, I'm never getting the answers to my questions. You know, and
right.
they've been there all the time.
Right. But the struggle blocks the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. The addiction to struggle, but that's okay because we're beginning to be curious about struggle itself. So that brings us to another one of those four is that to become fascinated by discomfort.
And that's your tool number four.
I know people go, huh? You know, no way, because if you really look at that little door you have open on your forehead, you'll see it's all about trying to get to what you do want and get away from what you don't want. But I ask people, has that ever brought you the peace, the deep peace you long for? And everybody says no. And so we look at the yin and yang symbol. It's such a powerful symbol. Here is the dark and the light of life. And they're not on opposite sides of a line. They're actually nestled together.
Together.
And in the light is a point of dark, and in the dark is a point of light. And so what I am offering is, there's a great quote from Agnes Whistling Elk, a Manitoba Indian medicine woman, that she says, everything begins with a circle of motion. Without the positive and negative poles, there would be no movement. There would be no creation. Without your dark side, your beauty would not exist. Honor all as a part of the Great Spirit. And what I add to that is that it is in the places that are the most uncomfortable, the heartache of our 20-year marriage, our husband coming to us and saying, I don't love you anymore, or the lump in the breast, or the death of a child. What we're beginning to learn how to do is actually be curious about what that brings up inside of us, because the greatest challenges bring up the greatest spells that we have taken on, these spells of fear and not enoughness and non-trust. And the feeling that we're separate from life. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Right. It's all connected. Through all of what you just spoke about, Mary, that's how the healing of the heart happens.
All the healing eventually happens in the heart. You know, I was interviewed for a really interesting book called M-Braining a number of years ago, and the M stands for multiple braining, and they took 600 of the leading edge research studies that have shown that we have three brains, you know, and more science is talking about this gut brain. You know, we're hearing a lot about how, you know, the bacteria in your brain and your gut brain really affect your head brain. You know, they're all connected. Our head brain, and then our heart brain, and all the research is saying that our main brain is the heart. And yet for most of us, this brain was shut down when we were young. We closed.
To help us feel safe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the horrible pain is that we closed our hearts to ourselves. That's why I could break my own arm and try to kill myself three times and then feel a horrible failure that I was even a failure at suicide, because my heart was so closed. And this is, you can't open the heart, because the heart's always open. We just don't see it. And this work really is about coming home to our heart.
Would you say that's the biggest truth, the biggest shift you made, was coming home to your own heart?
Yes, by far. Well, coming home to my heart, that brought me back to life, to the absolute magic and wonder of life. Do I live there all the time? No. I have two very, very close family members for the last year and a half have been very ill. But I don't know what I would have done with this kind of work, because I call it becoming a tightness detective, that sometimes my heart was just so, it just actually literally hurt. And everything inside of me wanted to tighten down around that. Of course, then I wanted to eat. So now my eater has been more here lately, but it's now my guide. It shows me when I am cutting myself off from life and from my heart. And so I get tight and I go, oh, and then I bring curiosity and I ask questions, and slowly and surely it all opens back up again.
So there's an ebb and flow that you're now mindful of when you know we call them setback warning signs in our practice.
Right.
You catch it.
Yes.
And then you're able to reopen to all of the wonder. All of the curiosity.
Yeah.
I love
it. Even the wonder of the, if it's a wave
of the
compulsion.
Pain.
Yeah,
right.
Even of the pain. And that's why I call it becoming a tightness detective, because it, you begin, you know, the more you come back home into your body, the more you begin to, your body will tell you far before your mind will that things are starting to tighten. And that's the road to the lumbering beast with an IQ of 55 that says, I must eat or I will die. And then we can come back. We can soften it. We can open it. We can bring whatever is upset in that moment back into our heart.
And we can promise, those people who are listening to this who say, I don't have a clue what I feel in my body. I couldn't recognize that tightness.
Yep.
Just know that that goes hand in hand with the challenge or the compulsion that you've had, because our goal was to be disconnected. And we do feel in our bodies. But we've gotten so good at disconnecting that we're not even aware, but I promise you can bring that back. You know, when people have heard me say this before, that when a therapist used to say to me when I was working on my recovery, well, Ellen, if you don't have the words to describe the feelings you're experiencing, can you say where you feel in your body? And I would say, I couldn't tell you where I felt something in my body if it bit me in the butt. I mean, I just had no connection. Yeah. And today, that's one of the greatest clues. The first place I feel things before I can even intellectually or on a feeling level in my heart grasp it, I can catch the physical body sensation. And that's a pathway in your brain and your body that heals when you begin to do what you're describing, Mary, which is be willing to be curious and open.
And I invite people, and we have to actually honor exactly where we are. This is not a thing that you can rush. And I oftentimes invite people that before they get out of bed in the morning, they find three different sensations. We're not looking for feelings even. We're just looking, okay, right foot is cold. There is a tickle on my chin, and I have a slight ache in my head. So we begin to train the mind to be curious about sensations, and we have to be so respectful because we want to come back to life more than we can possibly know. And yet, that storyteller, the struggling self inside of us, got scared out of life. And so we need to be very gentle and very, very kind with it, you know, as we bring the attention back into our immediate experience.
That's what recovery looks like. And if anybody wants to learn more about this, I highly, highly, highly recommend all of Mary's books. Specifically, the one that we're talking about today is What's in the Way is the Way. Mary, also give Martha's email address one more time if anybody would like to get that chapter from you.
Right.
About
Martha,
the questions?
Yeah, Martha at Mary O'Malley, MaryOmalley.com. Or they can find her email address on my website at MaryOmalley.com. And that shows all the things, all the CDs I offer, all the groups I offer. I'm not doing retreats right now because of the family members, but I'll be picking that back up again. And I love to go to beautiful places like Hawaii and Costa Rica and Bali and all that.
How nice. It sounds lovely. And the books, for those who are interested, and the CDs are actually purchasable right on MaryOmalley.com. So,
and at Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, and you know, not the CDs. The CDs are only on my website, but the books are, you know, on most bookstores. Yeah.
Excellent. Mary, as always, thank you. I always learn from you when I have the privilege of doing these interviews with you. So hopefully we'll do more in the future. And thank you, and I hope your family members and all that's going on with them resolves in the best way possible. I know that pain, and it does open your heart to the love you feel for them, doesn't it?
It does, deeply, and the preciousness of this moment.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the day, and I also want to thank all of the Away Out Circle members who are listening, and to thank those of you who are sampling what we have to offer in the Away Out community. You can learn more about our 52 empowerment tools for overcoming emotional and binge eating and about our private safe members circle private coaching options, all to be found on my website, awayout.com, and that's spelled AweighOut.com, awayout.com. It's an end to emotional eating and weight obsession, and we hope to see you all in our circle. Take care, everyone.